Welcome to this week's edition of the Property Buyer and Sellers Podcast. I'm your host, Ken Hume, and I'm here to take you through the very latest news and views, hints, tips, and tricks to help you on your property journey. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Property Buyer and Sellers Podcast. First of all, sorry we've been away for so long, and thank you for all of those of you that have been downloading faithfully over the last few weeks. But we are now back. It's the 15th of March, 2024, and lots to talk about as far as the market's concerned and various bits and pieces. For those of you that don't know, my name is Ken Hume. We are a local estate agents in SW16 London. And we sell and let properties via a company called James Alexander. Any comments on the podcast, please do drop me an email at ken@jamesalexander.com. Always happy to hear from you and hope that you enjoy today's broadcast. Now, what is going on? First of all, let's go through a few headlines. And then I want to talk to you about timing for your move and why you need to get a wriggle on if you want to move house this year. But before we get into the subject, I just want to go through the headlines as always. And let's start with one from Reuters. And it's all about the interest rates. We're all interested. We're all worried. It's been crazy, hasn't it? Economists believe that the Bank of England will start cutting borrowing costs in the third quarter. The third quarter. That's a long way off, isn't it? According to Reuters, although 40% of those quizzed said the bank may act sooner, all but three of the 68 economists polled forecast at least one cut by the end of September, while around four in 10 said the first cut could come as early as quarter two. None of the respondents expect rates to come down this month, and nor do any foresee an increase. So it looks like we're unlikely to see a cut in the short term, and that's a bit of tough news for many of us that are struggling under very high rates. And especially many buy-to-let landlords that have gone to the standard variable rates. And a little tip for you there, though, of course, this is not financial advice. If you are a buy-to-let landlord and you can't find anywhere else that will accept your loan, and this is becoming common, and the reason for it is that where interest rates are so high, it's very much harder to prove affordability. And so that is the rent that's coming in versus the payments that you're making. Normally, lenders have a test of 125% of the rent coming in. So in other words, your rent coming in must exceed your mortgage by 25%. And now what we're finding is that many times, because the mortgage rates are so much higher, that equation doesn't work. So many people are sort of mortgage prisoners within the buy-to-let sector. And if you find yourself in that situation, what I would say to you is do approach your lender, because they are obliged to tell you what other offers are available, and you may be able to lock into another rate with your existing lender. Not financial advice, but might help many people I know are in difficult situations. We'll come on to buy-to-let a little bit later through the broadcast. A study reveals the UK cities with the most interest in house relocation. And it's an interesting one. I didn't expect this. One of the UK's most beautiful places, Lisbon, tops the UK list of cities with the highest interest in house relocation. And this is a place in Northern Ireland. It's followed by Bangor, and then English cities like Colchester, Norwich, York, and Chester. Aberdeen ranks as a city with the least interest in moving house. And this is a study from an agent, I think it's an agent called Get a Mover, in the news. Estate agents voice concern over rate rise. And this is a news headline in the Financial Times. And it says, agents are cautious about the housing market recovery as mortgage rates may start to rise again, according to a survey from the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors. While there has been a recent retreat in home loan rates, agents are concerned that this may stall. Although a small majority of agents expect sales to pick up in the coming months, there are fewer agents expecting more sales compared to the previous month. However, optimism about the longer-term market is growing, with 42% of agents expecting to sell more houses in a year's time. Additionally, there's been a rise in new instructions for house sales, indicating increased activity in the market. House prices in the UK have stabilised, with only 10% of respondents reporting a fall in prices in February across the UK. New buyer inquiries view for the second month in a row, with a net balance of 6% of professionals reporting a rise rather than a fall. Arrears levels are rising, according to another article, and this is homeowners struggling with remortgaging due to the worsening situation with interest rates. And it says that arrears levels among mortgage borrowers have worsened since the fourth quarter of 2023, as homeowners coming off fixed rate deals are forced to remortgage on less favorable terms. borrowers in arrears on £20.3 billion worth of mortgages. That's an increase of 9.2% in the previous quarter, according to the Bank of England. The proportion of total loan balances with arrears increased from 1.23%, and that's the highest in 8 years. Mortgage lending statistics showed a slowdown in new mortgage commitments as well. And then there's news in the Daily Mail that major lenders have increased mortgage rates. It's a bit of a surprise for some because it's confusing, isn't it? And the reason it's confusing is because the swap rates are changing all the time. But the bad news is that the Halifax has confirmed it will increase 2 and 5 year fixed rate products, but only by 0.2%. But nonetheless, it's significant if you're trying to look for a new deal. It's gone from 5.59 on average for a 2 year fix to 5.78. Second home ownership is causing deep divisions in Chelsea-on-Sea. There's an article in the Daily Mail how the issue of second home ownership has caused deep divisions among residents of a village. And this is happening all over the UK. Beautiful places are getting monopolised by money and the locals can't afford to live there. And it's causing deep divisions in the local communities. In 2022, and this is all about a place called Burnham near the Norfolk coast, North Norfolk coast. In 2022, the average cost of a property there was $1,800,000 compared to a Norfolk average of $299,000, making it one of the most expensive places in the country to buy a home and leading to the village being dubbed Chelsea-on-Sea. A recent referendum in September saw 80% of residents voting to stop outsiders from buying properties here. Of course, you can understand why. It's a strange situation there and really polarizing. There's a fresh court case offering hope for mortgage prisoners. Now, this I'm really in support of, and I do hope that they win. 10,000 so-called mortgage prisoners have signed up with a law firm to claim against the TSB. Now, the victims had mortgages with the bank when it collapsed following the financial crash in 2008. And then they were sold on these loans to other organizations, and they left people with really high mortgage rates. Totally unfair. And the trial commencing July 22nd will determine whether the bank has financially exploited its customers in this situation. And the lawyer Damon Parker at Harkers Parker said tens of thousands of mortgage prisoners are still stuck on these high interest rates through no fault of their own. The financial pressure has devastated all affected and has led to families losing their homes, relationship breakups and suicides. People have been desperate for help, and it's their contention that these people have been terribly financially exploited and deserve recompense. Well, I would agree, and I wish you all the best with that. A UK finance boss says first-time buyers have been impacted greatly by interest rate rises. Now, this is something that we've been saying for a while now. Many of you millennials will have been told by your parents that, you know, you've got it so easy these days because when we were younger, you know, we had to go out there and get our mortgages and interest rates were 15%. But they forget that property prices were so much lower then. First-time buyers have got it harder today because regardless of the fact that interest rates aren't hitting those peaks, it is the case that property prices are so much less affordable that it's really, really hard for young people. A first-time buyer in 2023 would have needed to stretch their loan out for half a century to achieve the same level of affordability that they would have had across a 30-year mortgage in 2022, according to David Posting's chief executive of UK Finance. He highlighted the impact of rapid interest rate rises on first-time buyers and suggested that house prices may stagnate as affordability remains stretched. The number of mortgages handed out to first-time buyers in 23 was the lowest since 2013, down 22.4% on the previous year. This despite 287,000 loans advanced to first-time households. The squeeze on incomes has seen mortgage arrears rise, but further stricter affordability tests have protected lenders and borrowers to a great extent. As a result, arrears levels remain at low levels when looking at historical comparisons. And yeah, we echo that. We find that when you look at actual arrears levels, although they're higher than they have been, statistically, they're nowhere near at crisis levels. And that's because although interest rates have risen, people generally have been able to afford due to the more strict affordability test that came in post the financial crisis in 2007-9. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the situation with the new Renters Reform Act, which is coming in. There's a lot of people out there suggesting that the Renters Reform Act will be some sort of panacea and it will somehow help tenants. And I see very little in it that's going to help tenants. Yet there are some things in there that may help them a little, but generally speaking, what I see is a bill that will scare landlords. And if you scare landlords, they will choose to exit the sector. Because one of the reasons that landlords entered the sector, if you go back in history, was due to the reforms to the Housing Act, which led to a Section 21 notice, meaning that landlords could get their properties back when they needed to. Now we're talking about the abolishment of that notice and its replacement with several other notices, which basically amount to the same thing, more or less. They're just different kinds of notices. The idea that the Section 21 no-fault eviction is being used as a weapon against tenants, in our experience, is largely not true. It's largely used because there are issues with the tenancy and therefore the landlord needs their property back, probably to sell it, otherwise to give to a family member or indeed move in themselves. But we're finding an astonishing number of people seem to think that landlords are out there pressing this button for no reason at all. I did write a blog on this recently, but the belief that it's going to be some sort of solution for the tenants is just untrue. And I'll tell you what my thoughts on it are. Councils now, if tenants go in and say, look, I need new accommodation because I've received a notice to quit from my landlord, then before councils will assess people, they will actually tell them to wait until they're evicted, before they'll even help them. They even encourage them to make the landlords go to court to delay them becoming a homeless statistic. The reason they want to become a homeless statistic is that then they feel that the council will provide them with cheaper housing and good quality council housing. And largely, there aren't a number of council houses around. Certainly in our borough here in Croydon, we're finding that most of the tenants are going into temporary accommodation and end up re-entering the private sector anyway at a later stage. But nonetheless, there is this indication from councils that sometimes it's almost like they see that there's a solution to the problem by getting evicted. And most of the time, it just doesn't work because there is a lack of supply. And this is the elephant in the room that no one's addressing, the lack of supply. And the Renters Reform Act does nothing to address this. They talk about rogue landlords. Rogue landlords are a tiny percentage of the market. And then many tenant groups cite them as the problem. I'm not saying there aren't landlords out there that are problem landlords. But if you look at the percentage of problem landlords in the wider sector, it is tiny. It's I think we worked it out last year at 0.04%, roughly. The issue of lack of housing stock is caused by successive governments selling rental stock and then not reinvesting in new stock for rent. If we want the market to stabilize, increased supply is needed. And the problem is that if we keep pushing landlords in order to tighten down the ability of those landlords to regain their property within a reasonable time frame, then we will scare them away. And many of them are sitting on quite large amounts of equity, and they'll take that money out of the sector. And that would be fine if the government had an alternative. But we are talking about 400,000 landlords, many of whom are already voicing that they may exit the sector. For those that remain, I do believe that property will remain a good investment in the UK. And the reason it will remain a good investment is purely because the supply is dwindling so greatly that we can expect house price inflation and rental price inflation particularly to really jump over the next few years as more and more landlords decide to walk away. There are things that the government could do to help the sector. And I'll tell you what I think they are. Number one is appoint a housing minister that is cross-party, has vast experience at the sharp end of the market, and is appointed for a minimum term of 5 years. This government's shameful policy of changing housing ministers every year has done immense damage, as the ministers appointed just get to grips with the hugely complex area that they're in, and then they're ousted just as their learning curve begins to take shape. You need someone that's in post for a long time because the market is so complex. I remember years ago, one of my developers had been asked by a then housing minister if he could visit a building site that he was developing. And the reason he wanted to visit the site was that he'd never visited a building site. Now, this was the housing minister of the UK. I mean, it just beggars belief that someone with that little experience was put into that post. But the problem is we need long-term, highly experienced people to start to tackle the problem of supply. Number two, build more homes for long-term rental. This is not happening in sufficient volume to cope with demand. And number three, of course, give small landlords the confidence that the government wants them to continue as they need to. By repealing the awful Section 24, this is the ability to allow landlords to offset their costs, the interest payments against rents. And then Make sure landlords can exercise their right to possession in a reasonable time frame through improved court procedures by leveraging online technology and creating a specialist housing court. I mean, the problem is that with all this talk about these new notices, there's going to be lots of confusion. There's going to be more landlords that are scared, and the housing queue for eviction in various guises is going to increase. And we're already talking about many months before housing cases get to court. And therefore, whilst making all these changes, you need to make the playing field level. And the only way you do that is to improve access to the courts for landlords. Because at the moment, if a landlord does want to exercise their legal right to take their property back, it can take up to 2 years for that process to take place, assuming that they have their paperwork in order. That process can be as little as 6 months, but can often be as much as 2 years. And it's really shocking to landlords when they discover this, but important that you know that there are many, many difficulties with evicting tenants these days. It's not as straightforward as some will have you believe, and it's certainly not the case that you can just be kicked out on a whim, as some tenant groups seem to suggest. Now, let's talk about moving house. One thing I wanted to talk about today was when you should move and why you should move in a certain point in the year. The best time of year to move, I believe, has always been the springtime. Why the springtime? Well, we've got the flowers coming up, signifying new hope. The sun's coming out. The evenings are lighter. The days are brighter. And with all those spring flowers, it does give an air of optimism to the whole market. Most houses look their best when the sun is shining. In fact, I don't know a house that doesn't look its best when the sun's shining, unless there's some sort of defect. So therefore, it's a great time of year for presenting your home in a positive light. More importantly, it's the longest selling season. People tend to start thinking about moving house between March and April, and that season goes on all the way to the end of June, and then starts to slow down for July, August as people take their family holidays. So from that point of view, why should you get a wriggle on if you're looking to move this year? I'll tell you why. We have an election coming up. When the election comes, what will happen is the market will slow down. Why will it slow down? Because nobody's sure who will get back in and what that means for the housing market. And as I've said many times before, us Brits are good at doing one thing when we're really not sure what's going on, and that's sitting on our hands and doing nothing. The problem that gives you is A, less buyers out there, and B, less sellers out there. And if you're looking to sell and buy, as most of us are, that gives you a problem that even if you manage to sell, there won't be the supply of property out there to provide you with the sort of property you're looking to move to. So the best time to move this year is right now. You need to get a wriggle on, start the painful process of arranging agents to come around, have a look around your home, and give you advice on marketing. Because once we have an election announced, the market will start to slow down, particularly in the months leading up to the election, and actually the months after it. We're likely to have a change of government. No one really knows what that means. But one thing I know that it means from over 30 years in the industry is that everything will slow down as far as sales of houses are concerned. So my advice is, if you're looking to move soon and you have the equity to do it, remember this also. Number one, a lot of people look at, you know, what price can I get and will the market improve? Trying to call the market, nearly always a mistake in my experience. No one can tell you when the housing market will rise or fall. Do you remember at the end of the pandemic when everybody said house prices will fall off a cliff? What happened? House prices went up. So never try and call the market, because you'll nearly always get it wrong. Make sure that two things add up for you. One, you can afford to sell, leaving you sufficient monies to, number two, buy what you want to buy within the price range that you have available to you. If you can't find what you want where you want, then you've only ever got two choices: lower your sights or other areas, or if you're really fortunate enough, increase your budget. But for most of us, if we can't find what we want where we want, we then have to think, well, maybe I could do with a semi-detached house rather than detached, for instance, or maybe I could do without that garage, or without grounds, or without a house. Maybe go for leasehold, go for a flat in the area that you're looking to move to. For some of us, it's downsizing. For some of us, it's upscaling. And for some of us, it's about schools and moving for our children. In fact, the vast majority of people that I'm seeing at the moment are moving for reasons of schooling or downsizing or getting near to other loved ones and family members. So if you're thinking of doing that and you're thinking of doing it soon, then provided you have the equity, don't dwell so much on the price you're going to achieve, but look at the difference between the price you're going to achieve and what you're going to have to pay, because this is the real cost of moving. The pot of money, the equity that you have in your property, will largely be transferred in most cases to the new property anyway. And then whatever the housing market does, it will do in the new area, largely the same as it's done in the area you're currently in. So if you can afford to move and you're thinking about doing it, now is the time. Apart from that, the market generally, we're finding there are less inquiries from buy-to-let investors, as we would expect this year, given everything that's going on. And with interest rates being as high as they are, as interest rates start to come down, we sense that there will be more optimism, but it looks like it might be a while before that happens. Well, time will tell. Watch this space. And we'll be back next week with another edition of the Property Buyer and Sellers Podcast. As always, please do drop me your comments, like, share, and review the podcast, because that motivates us to keep going for you. Have a great week. We'll be here again, same time. Thank you so much for joining us on yet another edition of the Property Buyer and Sellers Podcast. You can find out more at our website, jamesalexander.com. You can email me directly, ken@jamesalexander.com. We are estate agents and we can give you hints, tips, tricks and advice wherever you're buying, selling, moving to or from. Thanks to Ben Sounds for the intro and outro today, and thanks to Jack Bowles for production.